Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is May the 13th. We are in Treyasar. We are in Chagai. And we are in the second perek of Chagai. Second and final perek of Chagai. Pasuk says, remember we're talking about the construction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the pasuk says, in the first perek we had discussed the Chagai was given a nevuah in Elul, two different nevuahs to speak to both Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel and also to Yehoshua ben Yehotzarek the Kohen Gadol about building the second Beis HaMikdash. So now we move ahead to the next month. Those two nevuahs were in Elul. Now it says Bashvi be'esrim ve'echad l'chodesh, in the seventh month, which is Tishrei, on the 21st of the month, Hayad var Hashem be'ad Chagai Navi Lemor, the word of Hashem came in the hand of Chagai Navi saying, Emarna el Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel pachas Yehuda, say now to Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, the leader of Yehuda, ve'el Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak ha-Kohen ha-Gadol, and to Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak, the Kohen Gadol, ve'el Sheris ha'am, Lamar, and to the rest of the people, saying, Mivachem hanishar, who is among you who remains, asher ra'es habayis hazeh b'chvodo harishon, that saw this house, this Beis HaMikdash, in its original glory. In other words, who among you was around during the first Beis HaMikdash that you remember what it was like then? Now, Zerubbabel was not. He was born in Bavel. But there were those who were older who had remembered the first Beis HaMikdash. Umo'atem ro'im osa'ata, and what are you seeing now of the Beis HaMikdash? Halo chamahu ka'ayim b'neichem. That is, in your eyes, it's like nothing. Meaning it's nothing compared to the first Beis HaMikdash. When we learned, say, for Ezra, you might recall that there's some sukkim there about how when they built a new Beis HaMikdash, there were those who were very excited in singing and dancing about the new Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, and then there were those who were crying, and the psukim say that the ones who were crying were the ones who remembered the greatness of the first Beis HaMikdash. They had been alive at the first Beis HaMikdash, and they saw that the second Beis HaMikdash paled in comparison. So they were crying that it would not, the second Beis HaMikdash did not compare. So here, in the Nevuah of Chagai, this issue is being brought up. So, Pasuk Dal, verse 4, Ve'ata, now, this is what Hashem says to Chagai, Chazak Zerubbabel Nu Hashem. Zerubbabel, says Hashem, you should be strong. V'chazak Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak ha-Kohen ha-Gadol. And Yehoshua Kohen Gadol, you should be strong. V'chazak kolam ha'aretz nu Hashem. And all the people of the land should be strong, says Hashem. V'hasu, and do. You should do what you need to do to build this Beis HaMikdash. Ki ani itchem, for I am with you, nu'um Hashem tzvakos, says Hashem tzvakos. Es hadavar shakarati itchem b'tzeischem b'mitzrayim, that thing, that those words that I made a covenant with you when you left Mitzrayim, v'ruchi omedes b'sochachem, my spirit stands within you, al tira'u, don't be afraid. Ki cho amar Hashem tzvakos, because so says Hashem tzvakos. Od achas me'ati, it's just a little bit more time. Vani marish es hashamayim v'sa'aretz, and I will cause the heavens and the earth, I will make them, I will shake them, I will make them, make something happen. Ves hayam, ves hacharava, and the ocean and the dry land. I'm going to make some incredible nisim happen, and when that happens, things are going to change. Vihirashti es kol hagoyim, and I will cause all the nations to tremble. Uvo chemdas kol hagoyim, and the desire of all the nations will come, meaning a lot of their money is going to come here to the Beis HaMikdash. Umilesi es habayis hazeh kavod, I will fill this house with honor. Amar Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem Tzvakos. Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Li ha-kesef v'li ha-zahav nu'um Hashem Tzvakos. To me is silver, to me is gold, says Hashem Tzvakos. I have all the silver, I have all the gold. Godol yiyeh kvod ha-bayis hazeh ha-achra min ha-rishon. The kavod of this bayis, this latter one, meaning the second one, will be greater than the first one. Amar Hashem Tzvakos says Hashem Tzvakos. Uvemakom hazeh etain shalom. And in this place I will give shalom. Ne'um Hashem Tzvakos says Hashem. So Hashem says, now it may appear that the kavod of this bayis is not as great as the first one, but that is going to change. And when it changes, you will see there will be gold will be coming in, silver will be coming in, and you will see that the kavod of this bayis will actually end up exceeding that of the first Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara tells us that when the second Beis HaMikdash was built, we know that the Jews were under the rule of the Persians. The Persians were the world power. They had control of most of the known world, and we were under their rule. But not long after the second Beis HaMikdash was built, only 34 years later, then Yavan, the Greeks, under Alexander the Great, conquered the Persians and ended up becoming the new world power. So the Persians had conquered the world from the Babylonians, and now the Greeks will conquer it from the Persians. Then the Greeks will be around for a little while, and then there will be, as Hashem says in Haggai, many nisim, and when those nisim happen, then the gold and silver will pour into Yerushalayim. Chazal tell us, this nevuah is talking about the nisim of Hanukkah, that under Greek rule, we will be under the yoke of the Greeks, and then there will be the nisim of Hanukkah, and when that happens, then, after it's over, the nations of the world will respect the Jews, and they will bring gold and silver to Yerushalayim. We will become enriched, and through that, the second Beis HaMikdash will become, in certain ways, greater than the first Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara tells us that, for example, that when the Jews first built the second Beis HaMikdash, the gates of the Beis HaMikdash were made out of copper. Later, they became wealthy, and they changed it into gold. That is an example of what happens during the second Beis HaMikdash, where when we built it, we were poor, and we had to scrap things together, get a lot of help from the king, from Artaxasta, but eventually we became very wealthy. And that happens through what is being prophesied here, through the Nisim of Hanukkah. And when we become very, very respected, and the cover of the second Beis HaMikdash exceeds that of the first Beis HaMikdash. Now there is a debate in the Gemara and Bava Basra. What does it mean when it says in Pasuk Tes in verse 9, Godol yiyeh kavod habayis hazeh acharon min harishon, that the kavod of the second Beis HaMikdash will be greater than the first Beis HaMikdash. Both opinions are true. The question is, what is the main thing the Pasuk is referring to? One opinion is it's referring to the length of time that the second Beis HaMikdash stood. The first Beis HaMikdash we know stood for 410 years. The second Beis HaMikdash stood for 420 years. And so the second Beis HaMikdash's kavod, its length of existence, exceeded that of the first Beis HaMikdash. The second opinion is it's referring to its beauty, that the second Beis HaMikdash eventually is redone, and it ends up being more beautiful than the first Beis HaMikdash. Under the rule of Hordus, he makes the second Beis HaMikdash very, very beautiful. And so in certain ways, the kavod of the second Beis HaMikdash is greater than the first one. Now, the first Beis HaMikdash was without question greater, because we know, as we mentioned last time, that there are five nisim, five things the second Beis HaMikdash did not have. The Shechina, the Aron, etc. Whereas the first Beis HaMikdash had those things. We were certainly, there was more spirituality in the first Beis HaMikdash than the second one. However, in a certain way, the second Beis HaMikdash is greater. And they're telling us in the Gemara, the length of time and also the beauty of the second Beis HaMikdash exceeded that of the first Beis HaMikdash. We're going to come back to Pasuk Ches to verse 8. This Pasuk of Li HaKesef, Li HaZav, Nu Mashem Tzvokos, silver is mine, gold is mine, says Hashem. This is a very, very commonly quoted Pasuk throughout Chazal. We're going to give some examples of that, Mitzvah Hashem, later on. In addition, if we have time, we'll discuss as well in Pasuk Tes in verse 9, the fact that it refers to the second Beis HaMikdash as Habayis Hazeh HaAcharon. Acharon is often translated as the last one. That implies there's only going to be two Bate Mikdashos, because it says the kavod of this bayis, the last one, will be greater than the first one. It's referring to the second Beis HaMikdash. So we know there's a third Beis HaMikdash. And the word Acharon does not translate as last, but rather latter, or the last one that we're up to now. But there'll be another one later. So Mitzvah Hashem, if we have time, we'll come back to that word Acharon and show how that word is used in Tanakh. But we move on now to yet another Nevuah of Haggai. And this Nevuah, the timing of the Nevuah, is very interesting. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. Be'eshem va'arba la'chi'i, in the 24th day of the 9th month. The 9th month is Kislev. This Nevuah takes place on the 24th of Kislev. Now the Nes of Chanukah had not yet happened. Haggai just said a Nevuah about the Nes of Chanukah, but it hasn't happened yet. Here, this Nevuah happens on the day, the calendar date, prior to the day in which the Chanukah Nes will happen in the future. This is on the 24th of Kislev. Bishnas Shtayim L'Daryavish, the second year of Daryavish. Hayad Var Hashem B'yad Chagai Anavi Lamar. The word of Hashem came in the hand of Chagai Anavi saying, Kol Mar Hashem Tzvokos, so says Hashem Tzvokos. She'al Na'es HaKonim Torah Lamar. Ask now the Kohanim about Torah, saying, what Hashem is telling Chagai to do is to test the Kohanim. Because the Kohanim have not been serving in the Beis HaMikdash for 70 years, there is a concern that they have forgotten the halachos of Tumah and Tahara, and which are very relevant to the Beis HaMikdash. And so Haggai is being told to test the Kohanim, ask them questions, and to make sure they understand the laws of Tumah and Tahara. Now I'll read the next few psukim, and then we will discuss exactly which laws we're talking about over here. Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Hein Yisa Ish Bisar Kodesh Bichnaf Bigdo. A person will be carrying meat of Karbonos in his cloak. Knaf is part of the garment in his cloak. V'naga bichnafo, and he'll touch with his cloak, el alechem, vela nazid, vela yayin, to the bread, to the cooked item, to the wine, vela shemen, and to oil, vel komachol, and to all other food, ha yikdash, will it become sanctified? Will it be sanctified or not? If that happens. That's the test. Vayanu akonim vayomru lo. And the Kohanim responded, they said, no, it will not be sanctified. That was one question with one answer. That was the first question on the exam. Pasuk Yigil, verse 13. Vayomer Chagai, im yigat tmei nefesh b'chol eila. If someone was tamei nefesh, which means they became tamei from touching a dead body, if they touch in any of these, in all of these, hayitma, will it be tamei? The Kohanim responded, they said, yes, it will be Tameh. That was the second question on the exam. There may have been more questions, But we're only told these two questions on the exam. A two-question exam. Vayan Chagai Vayomer, and Chagai responded and said, Kein ha'am azeh, so it is with this nation. V'chein ha'goy azeh, so it is, another word for this nation. Lefanai, in front of me, Numa Hashem says Hashem. V'chein koma seyedeim, and also all the work of their hands. V'asher yakrivu sham, and all that they bring close to there. Tamehu is tameh. That is a criticism. So, we'll see that there's going to be different ways of understanding this, but the simple understanding is they failed the exam. They failed the test. So, what is the test, and did they actually fail, and how do we read these psukim, these three psukim? So, let's first review some of the rules of Tuma and Tara, which are not relevant today, or almost not relevant today, because we do not have a Beis HaMikdash, we do not use, we don't have kadshim, we don't have karbanos, and the truma and the challah that we have, which also has prohibitions of tuma and tara, we presume everybody to be tamei, and therefore we don't deal with them in the way that we would deal with regular truma and challah in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So normally we have, you start with, how does tuma begin? You start with an item that is inherently tamei. That would be something like a sheretz, which would be a dead, one of the eight shrutzim listed in the Torah, like a mouse. That would be an example of that. That is tameh. It is itself tameh. Another example would be a person who has tsaras. That person is themselves tameh. So you start with something which is tameh. That is called an av hatumah. That's a father of tumah, because the tumah originates with that item or with that person. Then, if that person or item touches something else, that something else can be one of four categories. It either touches a person, or a utensil, or food, or drink. Those are the four categories that can contract tumah. So if the original item, whether it's the dead mouse, or whether it is a person who has tsaras, or anything else like that, if then that item comes in contact with either a person, or food, or drink, or a utensil, the word utensil, keli, is very broad. It includes pots, pans, forks, spoons, etc. It also includes clothing. It includes essentially any functional household item. So, if any of these categories come in contact with the Av HaTumah, with the original Tumah, then they become Tameh. And they are called a Rishon LeTumah. They become a first level Tumah, meaning first level down from Av HaTumah. If one of those items touches another item, then that next item becomes a Sheni, a second level Tumah. Then those items touch a third item. The third item becomes a shlishi, a third level tumah, and then a revi'i, and then perhaps even a chamishi. So tumah moves on as one thing touches another, touches another, touches another. However, there are limitations about what can actually become a second level tumah, third level tumah, fourth level tumah, fifth level tumah. There are very significant restrictions on that. In other words, first level tumah rishon is any of the items I mentioned, any of the categories I mentioned, people, utensils, food, and drink. All of them can become a first level tumah if they come in contact with an av hatumah, with a source of tumah. But when you move from first level tumah to second level tumah, we shed two categories. According to the Torah, neither people nor utensils can become a second level tumah. Only food and drink can become a second level tumah, according to the Torah. Now, rabbinically, there could be some exceptions, but generally, that's the way it works, that a second level tumah can only be a food or a drink. What about a third level tumah? So, a third level tumah, now, we shed even food and drink. We shed most food and drink. most food and drink cannot go beyond a second level tumah. They would not contract a third level tumah. The only items that can contract a third level tumah would be that which is truma, or that which is hektish, that which is karbanos. Those are the only things that could contract third level tumah. Food and drink that is either truma or karbanos, hektish. Fourth level tumah, we shed the category of truma. Truma cannot become a fourth level tumah. Only hektish, only karbanos can become a fourth level tumah. Beyond fourth level, almost nothing can go. There is one exception, which has to do with the Parah Adumah, which we're not going to discuss this evening. For all intents and purposes, it stops with the fourth level tumah. Now, when I say it can't contract further, that means as follows. That means that, let's say, a shirt comes in contact with a dead mouse. That shirt becomes a Rishon L'tumah, first level tumah. Now, if that shirt then comes in contact with a pair of pants, those pants do not become second level tumah. They're not tameh at all. They remain tahar, because utensils cannot become anything less than a first level tumah. If that shirt comes in contact with a loaf of bread, that loaf of bread will become a second level tumah. If that loaf of bread then comes in contact with a piece of cake, that piece of cake will not become a third level tumah, unless that piece of cake happens to be truma or karbanos. Well, the piece of cake presumably can't be karbanos, although there is are flour offerings. But that third level tumah, even though it is food or drink, it would remain tahar. If a second level tumah, that loaf of bread, touches a piece of cake which is neither truma nor kadshim, that piece of cake is tahar. But if that loaf of bread touches, let's say a piece of meat that is hektish, then it will become a third level tumah. If that piece of meat then touches truma, that truma is tahar, it will not become tameh, because it can't get any worse than a third level tumah. But if it touches another piece of meat that is kadshim, then that next piece of meat will become a fourth level tumah. And that's the way it works. Chagai was testing the Kohanim about this knowledge. And the way you read Pasuk Yud Beis is, a man will be carrying meat of Kodesh, meat of Karbanos, Bichnaf Bigdo, in his clothing. Vinaga Bichnafo, and he touched with his clothing. Now, when it says Bisar Kodesh, meat of Kodesh, here, now this is a little confusing, the word Kodesh does not mean Karbanos, even though normally Hekdesh means Karbanos. In this case, it is a euphemism, and it actually means meat of a something which is Tame, an Av Hatuma, like a dead mouse, or let's say a Nevela, an animal that died, a cow that died. Not shechted properly, but just died. Then that is going to be tameh. It's an av hatuma. It's a first level. It's not a first level tuma. It's the source of tuma. And then if that, he's holding that in his cloak, and then he touches vinaga. He touches now bichnafo. He touches with this cloak or with the thing in his cloak. He touches now. What does he touch? Lechem. That's one bread. Nizid. That's two. That's a cooked item. Yayin, wine, is three, and shemen is four. So he touches with that item, touches one item of food, another item of food. In other words, the tumah touched the bread touched the cooked item touched the wine touched the oil. That's four levels of tumah. And we are presuming that we are dealing here with all hektish items, all karbanos items. After all, he's testing the Kohanim, so to see if they can work in the second Beis HaMikdash. So because we have four levels here, we go from that which is in his cloak, and it touched the bread became a Rishon. The bread touches the cooked item becomes a Sheni. The cooked item touches the Yayin, the wine becomes a Shlishi. and then the wine touches the oil becomes a revi'i. Ve'el kol meichel, or, now this is or, not and, or any other food, that fourth level, ha'yikdash, will that fourth level be, now the word kadosh here does not mean sanctified, rather it means tamei, just like the first word kodesh in this pasuk means tumah, here also it means tumah, it's a euphemism. Will that fourth level be tamei? And they responded, vayanu hakohanim vayomru lo. They responded, they said, no, it will not be tamei. According to this way of reading the pasuk, they failed the first question of the exam, because they responded that you can't have a fourth level of tumah for hektish, for karbanos. And as we said in our introduction, that is not the case. The fourth level of karbanos, you can have a fourth level of tumah with karbanos. That's one opinion in the Gemara. The other opinion in the Gemara is that no, there actually are five items here, because it's not that the tamei meat, the sheretz, the dead mouse, touched the bread, but rather the meat touched the clothing, then the clothing touched the bread touched the cooked item touched the wine touched the oil being the fifth level, and the question was, can there be a fifth level of tumah with karbanos? And they answered correctly, no. So we have a difference of opinion of how to read this pasuk. Everybody's agreeing to the rule, to the law. The question is, were they being asked about fourth level tumah? And they answered, there is no fourth level tumah for hektish, which is incorrect. Or were they being asked about fifth level tumah? And they answered correctly, there is no fifth level tumah for hektish. That's the two ways of reading this pasuk. What about the next question on the exam? Yud Gimel. By listening to this shir, you will be able to pass the exam when the Mashiach comes. So he asked them, now, what if the same thing happens, but we're going to change the case slightly? Instead of it being that the original tumah was a dead mouse or a cow that died, rather it's tmei nefesh. It's a dead body touches the first item, which touches the second item, which touches the third item, which touches the fourth item. What about that? So here we know that the rule is that although I told you that the origination of tumah is called an avatumah, and then you have all these levels afterwards, there is an exception to that, and the exception is a dead body. A dead body is called avi avos hatumah, the father of all fathers of tumah, because there's an extra level of tumah, which means that a dead body actually is a step higher of tumah than all other types of tumah. So whereas the dead mouse starts here and then there are four levels under it, the dead body starts one level above and then there are five levels under it. And so the dead body, a person comes in contact with the dead body, that person is not called a rishon, a first level tumah, he's actually called an av hatumah. He's actually equal to the origination of tumah. And then after him, there are still four more levels. So the question was, if we change the case and we instead substitute the dead mouse for a dead person, would there be tumah? Hayitumah? And here, the Kohanim answered it in Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, Vayanu Akonim Vayomru Yitmah. Yes, there will be tumah over here. So, in this case, they answered correctly according to all opinions. They answered correctly that there will be tumah in this case. So, with that, now it's a little more complex than that, because what you have to do is you have to go through the first two opinions and you have to plug them in to this second pasuk as well, which we could do, but then we'll really get bogged down in this whole thing. So we're not going to do that right now. But suffice it to say that there really are two ways of reading this pasuk as well, which is dependent on the one before, but either way they answer the question correctly. So According to one opinion, they got the first answer wrong and the second answer right. And according to the second opinion, they got both answers correct. The Gemara says, according to the one who got, they got it both correct, so then they understood the rules of Tumah and Tahara. According to the one who says they got the first answer wrong and the second answer right, why would they not have known the answer to the first question, but they would know the answer to the second question? The Gemara says, because they were better, they knew better, they throughout the 70 years of Galus, they did a better job of remembering the rules of Tumas Meis, of the Tumah from a dead body. That they were more, I don't want to say more familiar with, because remember, the rules of Tumah and Tahara during the Galus of Bavel didn't apply for them, just like it doesn't apply for us in many ways. It applied more for them than for us, but still, they forgot them over time. But still, they managed to hold on to the rules of Tumah Meis, of a dead body, more than they held on to the other rules of Tumah. But either way, Pasuk Yudalet, verse 14, Chagai criticizes them. Vayar Chagai vayomer, kein ha'am azeh v'chein ha'goy azeh, so it is with this nation. Lefarai nu Hashem, in front of me says Hashem. V'chein kol ma'asi yedem, and also all the work of their hands. V'ashe yakrivu sham, and all they bring there, meaning to the Beis HaMikdash, Tamehu is Tameh. So the Gemara says, according to the opinion that says that they got the first answer wrong, it means they didn't really know the rules of Tumah and Tahara well enough to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So Chagai is now criticizing them. If you don't beef up on your Torah, if you don't sit down and open that Gemara and start learning, then everything you do in the Beis HaMikdash is going to be problematic. You're going to make things Tameh all around. You'll know some things, you won't know other things, and everything is going to be a mishmash, and there's going to be rampant tumah in the Beis HaMikdash. Because you can't just stop every single second and ask a shayla. You got to learn. You got to know something. And you can't be amaratzim. You can't be ignorant. And so he's telling them, right now, before we finish building this Beis HaMikdash, everybody needs to start a chavrusa and sit down and learn, in order to know what you're talking about, so that when the Beis HaMikdash is completed, you'll know what to do and you will not have rampant tumah. According to the one who says that they got both answers correct, which means that they did know the rules of tumah and Tahara, why is Chagai criticizing them? So according to that opinion, the Gemara says, Chagai was prophesying that he said, I know that eventually in this second Beis HaMikdash, there's going to be a breakdown in learning, and people are going to start doing Averos, and there will be Tumah. In other words, now you may know what's going on, but I am warning you, you need to stay current. You need to keep up your learning. If you start to slack off, which I know is going to happen, if that starts to happen, there's going to be rampant Tumah in the Beis HaMikdash. I've mentioned to you before that the Chafetz Chaim writes, he proves from several places in the Gemara, that of the different areas of Torah, there are many areas that we are proficient in today, or we attempt to be proficient in today, because they're relevant, like the laws of Yomim Tovim, of holidays, and the laws of damages, the laws of marriage and divorce. These are things that we are proficient in. The laws of Shabbos, Brachos, we're proficient in these things. There are many things we're not proficient in because they're not relevant today. So the laws of Tumah and Tahara, we're largely not proficient in. The laws of Eretz Yisrael, we're largely not proficient in, although more recently we're becoming a little more proficient in them. Still, we don't know that nearly as well as the other laws that we have. But the Chafetz Chaim proves that throughout the generations, Klal Yisrael, Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars, were always proficient in the laws of Karbonos. Why? Even though it's not relevant today, because Mehera Yibana Beis HaMikdash, we hope and pray that Beis HaMikdash will be built speedily, tomorrow perhaps, and if that should happen, then we're going to need to bring Karbonos. And when we bring those Karbonos, we are going to have to know what to do, and the questions are going to be asked, and the Talmidei Chacham and Torah scholars have to know what to answer. And therefore, we need to be proficient in the laws of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, he's not talking about Tumah and Tahara. He's talking about the laws of the Karbonos themselves. But here, Chagai is taking them to task about the laws of Tumah and Tahara. Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. Ve'ata, now simun alavavchem, put now your hearts, min hayom hazev amala, from this day and on, miterem sum even el even beheichal Hashem, before a stone is put to stone in the sanctuary of Hashem. In other words, before this Beis HaMikdash is built, put your hearts to this, that you need to be proficient in Torah. Miyos amboel arimas esrim v'haisa asara. From now, he's comparing to what's been going on. What's been happening is you've come to a pile of grain that should have 20 measures of whatever it is that you're, whatever grain you have. V'haisa asara, you discover there's only 10 measures. Boel ayekev lachsof chamishim pura. You come to the wine vat to take 50 pura. Pura is a measurement. Vaisa esrim, you discover there's only 20. So what you were expecting to be a lot more ends up being a lot less. That's what's been going on. He kasi eschem bashidafon uvayerakon uvabarad. In the past, I have struck you down with shidafon, which is blight that hurts the crops. Uvayerakon and rot. Uvabarad and hail. Eis komai seidechem, all the work of your hands. Ve'ein eschem elayinu Hashem, and you have not been with me, says Hashem. Simun alavavchem, put to your hearts. Minayom azef amala, from this day and on. Miyom esrim v'arba latshi, from the 24th day of Kislev. He's emphasizing this, from this date and on. Leminayom asher yusan echal Hashem, from the day that the sanctuary of Hashem has been, that the foundation has been laid. It doesn't mean the original foundation, which took place 18 years earlier, but rather the new addition to the foundation. Simu levavchem, put your heart. He's emphasizing that the second Beis HaMikdash, the beginning of it, where they first started to improve that foundation, was on the 24th of Kislev. Ha'od azera b'megura, even while the seed is in the silo, v'aragefen v'ateina v'arimon v'etz hazayis lo nasa, so the seed has not yet come to the silo. And the vine and the fig tree and the pomegranate tree and the olive tree have not yet carried their crops. Minayom azeh, even from this day and on, avareich, I will bless. Even though the crops haven't even started to grow yet, I am now, from here on in, because you are working on the second Beis HaMikdash, you will see incredible bracha in the crops. Vayhidvar Hashem shemisal chagai, and Hashem's word came a second time to chagai, be'esim ve'arba lachodesh, on the 24th of Kislev, Lamar saying, Emorel Zerubbabel Pachas Yehuda Lemar, say to Zerubbabel, the prince of Yehuda, the leader of Yehuda, saying, Ani Marish es Hashemayim v'saretz, I am going to make the heavens and earth tremble. I'm going to shake up the heavens and the earth. V'afachti kisei mamlachos, and I'm going to turn over the thrones of kingdoms. V'ishmarati chozek mamlachos hagoyim, I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the nations. V'afachti merkava v'rochveha, I will overturn the chariot and its rider. V'yardu susim v'rochveyam, and they will fall, horses and their riders, ish b'cherav achiv, each man with the sword of his brother. You won't have to fight them. They will fight and destroy themselves, your enemies. Bayom ha'unu Hashem Tzvakos, on that day says Hashem Tzvakos, ekach ha'chaz Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel avdi, I will take you, Zerubbabel ben Shealtiel, my servant, nu Hashem says Hashem, v'santicha kachosam, I will place you like a seal. In other words, like the pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, kachosam alibecha, that a seal, a signet, was something which was permanent, like something strong, that I will stamp you. That's a better word, perhaps, a stamp. I will take you like a stamp, like I've been stamped with you. Says Hashem, is kiviyachol, as if you're stamped on me. Because I have chosen in you, Nu Hashem Tzvakos, says Hashem Tzvakos, as I mentioned to you before, that Zerubbabel would have been the melech, he would have been the king, had we had kings in the second Beis HaMikdash, as he is a direct descendant of David HaMelech, he's the son of Yechaniah, the king who was taken into Galus. So Hashem says, by working on the second Beis HaMikdash, you are going to have all kinds of bracha. Even before you have a second Beis HaMikdash, but by working on it, you will be zocheh, you will merit all kinds of bracha. You see that when we are working on the Beis HaMikdash, we are zocheh, we merit bracha. That means, although it's perhaps not the same level, But when we are working on bringing Mashiach to build the second Beis HaMikdash, we open up the heavens, we open up Hashem's bracha to us. Tzipisa liYeshua, when we wait for Hashem's salvation, we hope for Mashiach, we daven for Mashiach, we say those brachos in Shmoneh Esrei. When a person says that with Kavana, you think, well, you know, what's it doing already? Mashiach didn't come yesterday, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it's doing anything. We should be aware that by being focused on making the second base, the third, for us it's the third base HaMikdash, the third base HaMikdash happen, then we open up bracha to our lives. We bring bracha down. A person who davens for the third base HaMikdash is a person who's opening up the wellsprings of bracha from Hashem for that person personally and for all of Klal Yisrael. I'm going to go back to Pasuk Ches, verse 8. Liyah kesef, liyah zav nu Hashem tzvakos, to me is silver, to me is gold, says Hashem. This is quoted many, many times throughout Chazal, that Hashem is in charge of the silver, Hashem is in charge of the gold. Perhaps you're very familiar with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah tells us, in the, you know, Pirkei Avos, there's different notations for where to break up the Mishnahs. In this Siddur, it's Mishnah Tes. The Mishnah tells us, Amar Rav Yossi ben Kisma, Pamacha Seisim Alech Baderech, one day I was going on the road, Upaga bi Adam Echad, and a certain man met me. V'nasan li Shalom, he said Shalom to me, V'exati lo Shalom, I responded with Shalom. Amar li said, Rabbi, Me'eza Malkomato, where do you live? Amarati lo Me'ir Gedola, Shal Chachamim, Shal Sofermani, I come from a big city of Talmidei Chachamim, of Torah scholars. Amar li Rabbi, Ritzan Chashet Tadur Imanu ben Mekomenu, do you want to live in our place? I'll give you all kinds of wealth and riches if you come and move to our place. The commentaries say that this was not a situation where he was being offered to come and instruct them and teach them to make them into Torah scholars, but rather it was just come and be with us so that we have the merit of having a Talmud Chacham in our midst. If you give me all the silver and gold and all the precious gems in the world, I will only live in a place of Torah. And the Mishnah goes on to quote various psukim that emphasize this point that Torah is more precious than silver and gold. And the Mishnah concludes, Va'omer, and the pasuk says, Liyah kesef v'liyah zav, Numa Hashem Tzvakos, I'm in charge of silver, I'm in charge of gold. Don't make your decisions based on that. You make your decisions based on Torah. I'll take care of the silver, the gold, says Hashem. The Mishnah at the end of Kiddushin is discussing the type of vocation a person should have. What should you teach your children? What kind of jobs? And the Mishnah says you should teach them an umnos kala unikia. You should teach them a job, a vocation that is kala, that is easy, meaning that doesn't take up all of their time and all of their effort, that they have room in their lives for other things, for pursuits of Torah, and nikia, and clean, that it doesn't have deceit and dishonesty in it, in the type of vocation. So that Mishnah then goes through the question of what type of work to do. And when the issue of money comes up, the Mishnah quotes this pasuk, Liyah kesef, liyah zav, numa Hashem tzvakos. Hashem says, silver and gold, that's my issue. It's not your issue. You do what's right, and then the silver, the gold is mine to take care of. Finally, another example, we have a medrash called Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer is the medrash that is, it seems to be authored by, or at least partially authored by, the great sage, the great Tana, Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus was one of the Rabbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkinus started off life the son of a very, very, very wealthy man. And he would not do work. He was put in the field to do work. They tried to teach him Torah. The Torah wouldn't go in his head. He couldn't learn. He tried, he couldn't learn. So his father put him to work in the fields, and his father would constantly find him crying and not working. And his father would say, well, maybe you don't want to work in the shade, but I'll put you in the sun. Maybe you don't want to work in the valley, I'll put you on the mountain, etc. No matter what his father did, he found him crying. And his father said to him, finally, why are you crying? He said, I want to learn Torah. So his father said to him, you're 28 years old. You don't even know how to bench. You don't even know how to say Shema. You don't have the capacity to learn. You don't have the intellect for it. So he would not send him off to learn. In the end, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus ran away, and he came to the leader of the generation, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he tried to learn under him, and the Gemara tells us through great effort and also the help of others, and eventually Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus was successful in his learning. And not only was he successful in his learning, he was super successful in his learning, to the point where he became of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of his generation. The Gemara tells us that while he was still a student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, you get up and you teach the shir. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus said, I can't teach in front of you. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai walked out of the room so Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus could teach the shir. And Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus started to teach the shir, and the Mishnah says that his face started to glow, and it was shining like in the middle of the day, and there was light emanating from his face. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai came into the room behind him, where he didn't see him, and he kissed him on the head, and he said that he complimented him on the Torah that he was teaching. The Gemara says that at that moment, simultaneously, the father of Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus had come to Yerushalayim, where this was going on. Why did he come? Because his children had told him that he said, where is my son Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus? All these years he's gone, and they didn't know where he was. And finally, and his sons told him, you should write him out of your will. You should take an oath that he should not get any benefit from you. And finally, his father decided that was the right thing to do. After many years of his son being gone, he decided this is just not right. My son is insubordinate. He does not deserve any of my wealth. And he came to Yerushalayim to take that oath. And he walked into the room, and he did not know who his son was, who was standing and teaching the shir. And he heard Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai say that the Ashrecha, fortunate are you, you Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, and fortunate are those who produced you, your parents. And the Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus' father said, who are we talking about? And they said, this is your son that we're talking about. And his father said, if I would have known that this is the way he could turn out if he learned Torah, I never would have thought about taking an oath. And of course, he did not write him out of his will. And of course, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus did what remained part of the family. But Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus responded to his father. And he said to his father, if I wanted silver and gold, if that's what I wanted, Hashem could have provided it for me. Li ha-kesef, li ha-zav, num Hashem tzvakos. Hashem says, the silver and gold is mine. But I never wanted that. I wanted Torah. That's all I wanted. Even though I couldn't learn, but I desperately, desperately wanted to learn. And this pasuk is quoted there as well. Finally, in the just few minutes we have left, want to address pasuk Tes verse 9, where it refers to the second Beis HaMikdash as Acharon, as it seems like it means last. But Acharon doesn't mean last. Acharon really means latter, meaning the last one of the list that we're in right now. Doesn't mean it's the end all. The proof of this is, we talked about this when we learned Parshas Vayishlach, Parshas Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayishlach, we find that Yaakov Avinu prepared to meet his brother Esav, and he lined up his wives, his four wives, with their children. So it says that first, He had the Shvachos. He had Bilhah and Zilpah with their children. Then it says, the Leah Viladeha Acharonim. And Leah and her children were Acharonim. They were the Acharons. And then, V'Rachel V'Yosef, V'Yosef V'Rachel Acharonim. And Yosef and Rachel were the last. So, first it calls Leah and her sons the Acharonim. And then it says, Yosef and Rachel were the Acharonim. So, which one was Acharon? And we know the order was, first the maids, then Leah and her sons, then Yosef and Rachel. Rachel was the very last. So if Rachel's the very last, how do you refer to Leah as Acharonim? Because Acharonim doesn't mean, or Acharon doesn't mean the last. It means latter. So that up until that point in the list, Leah was the last compared to what we had just said. Leah came after the Shvachos, after the maids. But that wasn't the very last. The very last ends up being Rachel and Yosef, that they are even after Leah and her sons. It seems to me that this is what it means in Rashi. Rashi over there quotes the famous line, the famous idiom in Chazal that we all are familiar with, Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. That's what Rashi says over there. Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. So, last is precious. Why does it say Acharon twice? Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. So it seems like it's saying the further towards the end you get, the more precious it is. Meaning the second is more precious than the first, the third more precious than the second, the fourth more precious than the third. Acharon, Acharon, Chaviv. In the context that it's talking about, sometimes first is better, sometimes last is better. So in that context, it's saying that the later you get, the better it is. So Acharon, Acharon doesn't mean last. It means later and later. That's what it means. Because that's what the word Acharon means. It doesn't mean last, it means later or latter. That's what the term actually means, and that's why over here, when it calls the second Beis HaMikdash Acharon, that does not preclude a third Beis HaMikdash, it just means the later one compared to the first Beis HaMikdash.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.